All right, y'all, welcome back to the show here. It's Anti-War Radio. And hey, look at me, I got Eric Margulies on the line again. Welcome back to the show, Eric.
Well, nice to be back with you, Scott.
Well, good. I'm glad you feel that way. You guys know Eric. He's been a reporter mostly on Middle Eastern affairs, although all the way into Central Asia and wherever else, too. Of course, for decades now, he keeps a website at ericmargulies.com. Eric Margulies, really, is how you would spell it, I guess. Eric Margulies. Spell it Margulies, is what I'm trying to say. Nice new site. I like it.
Thank you, Scott. Finally. It was like pulling teeth to get it up, but there it is, ready to roll.
Yeah, never is easy getting a new website going, is it? But there you go. All right. The dangerous mess in Syria grows murkier. To start off, paragraph 3 reads, my assessment is based on reliable primary sources in Washington, Turkey, Jordan, and Lebanon. Good. Tell us everything that you've learned from all these awesome sources that you have.
Well, I should also say, and some from Syria as well. Well, what I've learned, actually, I've been developing the thought right along because I've been writing last November pretty much the same view. Now I've fleshed it out. I have much more detail. But what's happening is, look, it started as the United States, Britain, and France, in aligned with Israel and Saudi Arabia, and right-wing forces in Lebanon have been infiltrating armed fighters into northern Syria. That was the genesis of the uprising.
And now, you say in the article, don't you, that, and they have been since the very beginning, you're telling me this is where this whole revolt started, it was a foreign intervention.
That's correct. You have to compare it to what happened in Libya, because there are many parallels. The French Intelligence Service, DGSE, organized the first uprising in Benghazi, Libya, traditionally anti-Gaddafi area. Mm-hmm. And they organized it, armed it, and then they created this kind of revolutionary council, which was to become the recognized government of Libya. So the whole thing was staged, managed by French intelligence. What's happening in Syria is a similar thing. That's one strand of the story. You have an outside group using some Islamists, mercenaries, rogue fighters. The Syrian government is screaming terrorism. These are terrorist groups. It's saying, why should we refuse to negotiate with terrorists any more than the United States is going to negotiate with Al-Qaeda? Strand number two is the Assad Ba'ath Party has been in power for 40 years in Syria. 41 years, and it is detested. It's a very oppressive, brutal regime, and it's a minority regime run by Alawites, about 10 to 12% of the population, a Shia offshoot sect. The majority of the population, who are Sunni Muslims, hate the Alawis, who they consider to be heretics, and they're fed up with this dictatorial regime of the Assad family. So they're rising in rebellion, and that's a very legitimate, spontaneous revolt. Whether it's aiming for democracy or not, I don't know. I doubt it. There are other groups involved that are important, like Syria's Christians, who are very influential, about 10-12% of the population. They're supporting the Assad regime. They saw how the Christians of Iraq were destroyed, and they worry for their own future. The merchant class in Syria still supporting the government. Some Kurds, major big city dwellers, and then the armed forces and the secret police and security. So we're looking at a real civil war, part of which is being fueled by the Western powers, whose media is now presenting us this disingenuous view that it's poor, helpless people calling for democracy who are being gunned down in the street by the evil Assad regime.
God, what a mess. All right, well, So there's a lot to go over there. First of all, you're telling me basically that the people of Syria who, like, for example, in Nir Rosen's reporting, he's saying, hey, man, neighborhood to neighborhood, there are small groups of men who just grab rifles and volunteer to fight because they're sick and tired. They hate Assad. They're this natural rebellion. You're telling me, yeah, that's true, but those poor bastards are just being used by these outside powers. They can't make a move that they're not actually doing Hillary Clinton or Benjamin Netanyahu's dirty work. Is that basically what you're saying?
Well, they're not under control of the Western powers, but I'm not sure. They are working certainly at the same goal, which is to overthrow the Assad regime. You know, the U.S. backed off on overthrowing the Assad some years ago, because Washington concluded, and rightfully so, that they would be replaced by Muslim Brotherhood, which is very militant underground and would not be obedient to American commands. Or
some years ago, you mean like after the Iraq War?
Actually,
halfway through it.
When Israel last invaded, when Bush was still in office, okay, in his last years in office, and they said, well, no, because we're going to create a horrible Iraq-style mess there. Well, now this has gone by the board. The idea is let's get Iran, and the road to Tehran leads to Damascus, overthrow the Assads, and it'll be a big blow to the wicked Iranians.
Right. Well, yeah, the president made that pretty clear in his Goldberg interview in The Atlantic, where he and the interviewer brings it up this way, but Obama sure doesn't correct him or anything. This is all about weakening Iran. It has nothing to do with caring about the poor Syrians. Come on.
Washington is definitely, it's an election year. Washington is, and the U.S. media are gripped by hysteria over Iran. It's the only way I can describe it. Freud would have had a wonderful time with it. You know, we're going to go to war against a country that has no nuclear weapons and no delivery systems to send them, but we're going to go to war just in case they might.
Now, okay, I could understand, and you say in the article that France has interests in wanting their old empire back over there or whatever. That sounds like something Sarkozy would be up to. But what American interest is there in Syria at all other than what Netanyahu wants in Israel?
Well, there's the U.S. interest in that is in having everybody obedient.
Right, no examples left out.
That's why my last book I called American Raj, as in the British Raj, Imperial Raj in India. And that is everybody obey the United States and all the local rulers. You're going to report to Washington. And so that's one theme in American foreign policy. The other is that so much of American Mideast policy is dominated by Israel and by Israel's interests. And Israel's interest right now, as seen by the right-wing government in Israel, is to crush Syria, break it into, splinter it, and leave it a weak state with no capability to resist Israel at all.
Well, now, we talked about that before. This whole concept is really American neocons, I guess, at least coined the best phrase. David Wormser said, let's expedite the chaotic collapse in Syria so that we can control what happens next. But what I'd like for you to nail down for me is whether what you're telling me is your analysis, your conclusion based on all the evidence, or specifically you know that, say, I don't know, Netanyahu and Ehud Barak have agreed that, yes, this is our policy. We are hell-bent on regime change in Syria in the short term.
No, I haven't been sitting in their office or fly on the wall, so I'm assuming. But if this is
sure doesn't look like it. I'm not arguing with that. I just wanted to know if you had something that's really saying, oh, yeah, they've definitely decided that, you know.
No, I can tell you definitively about the armed intervention. This is supposition. However, as I've said before on your program, this is a very strong current of thought on Israel's right wing. That to break up all the Arab countries and leave Israel as the only man standing.
Right. Well, we sure seem to be tracking with that policy. That's funny because I think I could even find some causation to that correlation, but we might have to save it till after this break. It's Eric Margolis. EricMargolis.com is his website. The dangerous mess in Syria grows murkier, and we'll be right back. All right, y'all, welcome back to the show. It's Anti-War Radio. I'm talking with Eric Margolis. He's the author of War at the Top of the World and American Raj, Liberation or Domination. You can often find him at lourockwell.com, and his own website is ericmargolis.com. And I say it like that because if you spell it like that, that's how you'll find it. In fact, if you spell it wrong, your local search engine will probably help you out. The dangerous mess in Syria grows murkier, and we're talking about the wide and varied collection of factions already at war to some degree in Syria, and it sure looks like a combination of NATO and the Israelis are pushing very hard for the overthrow of the Assad regime. Despite the fact, Eric, that everybody knows that it's going to be, assuming they can make the state fall there, which I guess is just a matter of time, they have enough money and weapons to eventually, if they have to, take Damascus the way they did Tripoli or whatever. But then after that, everybody knows it's going to be one of Michael Ledeen's boiling cauldrons over there, and those things can be dangerous to everybody involved, you know? They're really playing with serious fire over there. Am I wrong? And wait a minute. And then the point is, they all know that. The Americans know that. The French know that. The British know that. The Israelis have got to know. They're like, hey, we're risking turning this into a massive jihadi factory or whatever, like Iraq was, only right on their northern border now.
Well, you're quite right, and everybody does know it, but the Western powers have are now closing their eyes to this, what seems like inevitability. They're setting the whole neighborhood on fire. If Syria really blows, the top blows off Syria, it could turn into another Iraq, it could turn into another Lebanon, which I covered in the 1970s, a dreadful civil war there. Sure, everybody's aware of it, but as I said, there's this mania now to get at Iran. Right-wing governments are fueling this. Even Israel hesitated for a long time because they got along quite well with the Assad regime. And the Assad didn't start making noise. They didn't start making noise about the Golan Heights, which Israel has occupied illegally since 1981, the Syrian Golan Heights. So they were okay with that. But even so, the French want to get their hooks back into Syria and into Lebanon. The Americans, we talked about, the Brits are just want to pick up the crumbs from the Americans, and there's a lynch mob forming. I think it's the best way to describe it.
Well, you know what it is? It's finally, it's reminding me of William S. Lind and what he has written about the end of the nation state and how fourth generation warfare is going back to generation negative one, really, to before Westphalia and the nation state. And all these things in the Middle East really are legacies of the old European colonies who themselves were nation states, and so they went and made nation states and left them behind. And of course, you know, America and Britain, especially since World War II, has been involved in keeping these things, you know, run by centralized dictatorships and whatever. But I guess, you know, the bet that we're making here, that we're talking about, is if you overthrow the state in Syria, you might not ever have a state of Syria to replace it ever again. Which I'm saying, you know, all things being equal, that would be great for the Syrians, but all things aren't equal. That just means that they're even more helpless to foreign powers like the United States and Israel and Iran and Saudi Arabia and whoever else too. But that's the kind of thing that they're playing with, right? That this will just be kind of a permanent low-level battleground. I guess that's what they want.
That's right. We've talked about the Zionist ideologue of Vladimir Jabotinsky from the 1920s. He was the most important thinker to the right-wing Israeli movements, and even today's Likud party. And his most famous doctrine was that he said the Arab countries are all fragile mosaics. Give them one good smack, and they'll fall into their component pieces. They'll shatter. Well, maybe not Egypt, but certainly the Arab states. And they're fragile, they're artificial, they're poorly ruled, there's not much sense of nationalism, there's a lot of sense of localism and tribalism. And this will, as you say, happen to Syria. Syria will be shattered, it'll break up. And then Iraq broken up. Saudi Arabia could also fall apart too. And guess who? Lebanon is a mess as it is anyway. This will leave Israel, really, as the unchallenged ruler of the area, except for Egypt.
Mm-hmm. Well, you know, those people really paying close attention back then might remember in 2002, maybe it was early 2003, Richard Perle had a former LaRouche kook, or maybe it was a current LaRouche kook, come and give a talk at the Defense Policy Board. Newt Gingrich was there, and they talked about how Iraq, he called it, Iraq is the tactical pivot. Saudi Arabia, meaning regime change in Saudi Arabia, is the strategic pivot. Egypt, the prize. Because Egypt is the center of Arab civilization, basically. So just, in other words, let's just turn all of these into boiling cauldrons. Let's just get rid of any monopoly on force and hope to perpetuate permanent war throughout them. He wasn't talking about spreading democracy and freedom and peace.
They wear Sears Roebuck suits, but aside from that, they could be fascists from the 1930s. And Lord save us from these bloodthirsty people, because they are really the beginnings of the American Nazi Party, not Nazi, but American Fascist Party.
Well, all right. Let me see if I can convince you to buy this. I read a thing that said that, you know, not all the Republicans are on board for John McCain's point of view on this. In fact, they even quote Mitch McConnell, partially quote Mitch McConnell, sort of going, I don't know, man, about this. So is there any hope at all that cooler heads, or at least, I don't know, less bought off heads or something could prevail in D.C. here?
I have a hope. Look, the President Obama, has been at least digging his heels in an election year. It's very tough to do, to tell the Israel lobby to slow down and to try and slow the rush to war.
On Iran, though, not necessarily Syria, right?
On Iran, correct. There are sensible heads in the Pentagon and in CIA particularly who don't want any more wars in the Middle East, and they're bureaucratically trying to throw out anchors to slow it down. And there's the old guard in Washington, Republican and Democrat, which are not in the hands of religious groups in the Deep South who are baying for war. So yeah, there is some resistance, but there's so much pro-war sentiment that I really wonder how we're going to avoid getting involved in another war in the Middle East.
That's funny what you say about the old guard. I remember Lou Rockwell one time wrote an article. It was about, is it going to be David Wimser or Robert Zolick to be Condoleezza Rice's right-hand man at State? And Lou Rockwell titled it, "It's a heck of a note to have to root for the Rockefellers."
So right, as usual.
And that's that old guard, like, oh, well, maybe, you know, Zbigniew Brzezinski can talk them out of doing something stupid. That's what we have to hope for now.
Well, we do, and that was the grown-up, mature, rational Republican Party of the 1950s, 60s, and 70s, which I remember well. I was
the ones who built this empire. That's now blown up in all of our faces.
But it was the crazies who came out of the woodwork. The far right-wing crazies that have now taken control of Republican policy, and it is very frightening. But the Republican Party, while it's baying for war, is also, the mixed metaphor, shooting itself in both feet. And this may be digging its own grave here, because a lot of Americans, I think, are going to see how extreme and disconnected from reality Republicans have become.
Mm-hmm. Well, you know, I didn't really think something until I was saying it during somebody interviewing me earlier on the radio, and then I realized I thought it, that when it comes to sanctions on Iran and all of the exemptions granted to Korea and Japan and all the rest of our allies, that they don't have to go along with our sanctions, that really kind of shows that the rest of the world sees America as a weak and dying empire, maybe even in the short term, because they're looking at it and saying, you know, it could be soon enough that we need Iranian oil more than we need our relationship with you, America, because what is your relationship going to have to offer us when you're losing all your power?
Well, that's right. I wrote in 1999 that India would emerge as a major rival for with the U.S. in the Middle East, because India is right next door, and India wants oil. And we see the beginnings of that. We see that happening today as India now is still buying Iranian oil while Washington protests. A dying empire, yes, but that can still lash out and cause a lot of damage.
Yeah, they have a lot of bombers left. All right. Well, I'm sorry we're all out of time, but we are. Thank you very much for yours, Eric.
Always a pleasure to be with you, Scott.
The heroic Eric Margulies. Everybody, ericmargulies.com, spelled like Margolis. The Dangerous Messenger, Girls Mercury. We'll be right back.